time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Welcome to the podcast, everybody. It's Monday, January 11th, 2021. I hope your new year is off to a great start. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals and is for mortgage professionals, and we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. In our Hot Topics segment today, we've got Dan Putney here with me. Dan is Vice President of Sales. He's also a Managing Director with Finance. And we're going to be talking about a recent survey Finastra did. They surveyed 301 consumers and 34 financial institutions. We're going to share the results of that survey. And the purpose of this is to share with you some insights that Finastra picked up that you might want to use as you prepare for the new year. It'll be very interesting. Also, be sure to check out last week's podcast where we had Dr. Michael Frantoni on from the MBA. He is the chief economist at the MBA and some great insights. So this whole month of January, we're putting together a series of podcasts that are really going to be helpful to you as you get ready to plan for the new year. So last week, Dr. Michael Frantoni, this week, Dan Putney. We've got a number of other guests lined up that are going to be very, very exciting, including Doug Duncan, chief economist for Fannie Mae. Very excited about our lineup for the month of January. We want to say a special thank you to Industry Syndicate. Go check out all the podcasts on industrysyndicate.com as well as Mortgage Media. We want to also say a special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Check out last week's podcast with Michael Frantoni. And then again, this week, we've got Finastra, Dan Putney joining us, and we have Lenders One. Say a special thank you to them. Justin DeMolio gave a great podcast back in June. We're going to have him on again in the first quarter of 2021. Also, the Mortgage Collaborative. Tom Gallucci was on December 7th. That was a really interesting interview. Check that one out. Also, the Community Mortgage Lenders of America. Michael Jones was on September 21st. Be sure to go back and listen to that podcast. Also, we have Inticom, which provides automation, outsourcing, and compliance solutions to the mortgage industry. Check out the interview we did with Linda Bomar on August 31st, 2020. Also, a special thank you to Josh Frem, who is a sponsor. He owns Incelerate, which helps lenders close more loans by engaging more effectively with borrowers, prospects, and past customers. Go back and listen to the interview back on August 17th of last year. Also, we have Celebrity Home Loans. Also, we have Mobility RE and Modex. Now, they operate in the same space, and that both companies help you recruit top loan officers, but they actually complement each other, and encourage you to check out on our sponsor page both of these companies and learn more about them. Pick the one that works best for you or do what some of our clients do, and that is retain both of them. Also, we have VendorSurf, Vidyard, and also a special thank you to our regulars, Alice Allen and Matt. Let's get over to Rob Van Rapphorst with this week's Mortgage Minute.
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. In late December, FHFA confirmed to MBA that it would not extend the GSE's policy flexibility, allowing them to purchase qualified loans that are in forbearance. The December 21st, 2020 expiration of this policy, which was not formally announced, eliminates the ability of the GSEs to purchase loans that enter forbearance after closing but prior to delivery. MBA will continue to advocate for FHFA to reinstate this policy and permit the GSEs to purchase qualified loans that are in forbearance to ensure smooth market functioning for the duration of the ongoing pandemic. Also, on Tuesday, FHFA released the final 2021 underserved markets plans for the GSEs under the Duty to Serve program. While these plans typically cover three-year periods, FHFA is extending the 2018 to 2020 cycle through 2021, given the economic and financial uncertainty attributable to the COVID-19 pandemic. That's it for now. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Rob. Great report. Appreciate our relationship with the MBA. While you're there, check out the Mortgage Action Alliance app. Get signed up for that. Make sure your voice is heard on the Hill. MBA does such a good job of representing our industry. Let's get over to Les Parker with this week's TM Spotlight and his macro view of the markets. Les?
Rick rolling? Bear rolling? TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy. Never gonna give, never gonna give. Give trend up. Never gonna give, never gonna give.
let yields down. After the reflation trade sputtered over the last few months, has it arrived? Notice how market-based inflation expectations keep climbing. At some point, the Fed will intervene in the new bear market to avoid choking off the recovery. But given the volume of new Treasury issuance to fund expected stimulus, mortgages become the loser. The Fed feels the purchase market is healthy enough to survive without heavy support and does not want to fuel a housing bubble. Let's hope the Fed does not turn around and hurt you. These views are my own. Want more? Go to tmspotlight.com.
Thank you, Les. Be sure to go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to Les's free newsletter. Or if you put in the word power, you get the paid version. Be sure to check it out. And now it's time for the mortgage rate update. What's going on in interest rates? Matt Graham is here with us, founder and CEO of MBS Live. And he has this week's market update. Matt?
This is Matt Graham with the MBS Live market update. After nearly 2 months of calm weeks, last week definitely wasn't calm. Things started out innocently enough with Monday and most of Tuesday trading in a fairly flat range, both for Treasuries and MBS. But we were never really worried about Monday and Tuesday until Tuesday evening when we were very much interested in the Georgia Senate election. And by we, I mean the bond market. And why is the bond market interested in the Georgia Senate election? Here's a quick refresher. There's nothing political here. There's no opinions or value judgments about either side of the aisle. The only consideration for bond markets is whether or not a single political party has control of the House, Senate, and presidency. And it's precisely that unified control that was at stake with the Georgia Senate election, because if both seats flipped from red to blue, that would give Democrats and Republicans each 50 seats in the Senate, with Vice President-elect Harris casting the tie-breaking vote at Democratic control. This makes it easier for COVID-related stimulus and other legislation to get passed, and that has implications in the near term anyway for increased Treasury issuance. In other words, if we're going to increase stimulus checks from $600 to $2,000, or if we're going to spend any additional money related to COVID stimulus or other legislation, we have to come up with a way to pay for that in the short term. And the way the government pays for those sorts of things is to sell more bonds, more treasuries. That increases the amount of supply, obviously. And from there, it's supply-demand 101. The higher the supply, the lower the price. And when we're talking about bonds, lower prices mean higher rates, all other things being equal. Of course, treasuries are not the same as mortgage rates, but any abrupt weakness in the Treasury market tends to translate to the world of mortgage rates. As a quick side note, that wasn't necessarily the case on several occasions in 2020, but there were some very big, very temporary reasons that mortgage rates had a lot of insulation against Treasury volatility. Wide lender margins are a part of that, as is an ongoing streak of MBS outperformance, which has now probably run most of its course. That means that as lender margins have compressed a little bit, and as MBS outperformance has become less likely, mortgage rates, therefore, are increasingly feeling the pressure to move higher in these cases when Treasury yields are spiking relatively abruptly. And that was certainly the case last week. If nothing else, the break above the 0.96 technical ceiling in 10-year yields was significant. Markets knew this, of course, and that was always sort of the unspoken staging area for the Georgia Senate election. Yields had backed up almost perfectly to 0.96 on the night of the election and then immediately broke after that. We had been talking on this podcast and as well as MBS Live about the probability that a Democratic sweep of the Senate election would result in 10-year yields moving up and over 1%. That's what happened, and it was sort of a slow motion train wreck for the rest of the week. The stuff that went down with the storming of the Capitol really didn't have any impact on the bond market. There was a little brief corrective rally, the kind that you would expect when something potentially risky is happening out and about in the world, but it was short-lived and didn't have any lasting impact on bonds. This was really all about trading the new political realities, as well as ongoing new year asset allocation trading related to the stock market. And there's quite a bit of corporate bond issuance, which can also put upward pressure on Treasury yields, all other things being equal. All told, from the moment the Senate results were relatively well known, bonds were in selling mode, and they didn't really stop for the rest of the week. 10-year yields ultimately hit levels nearly as high as 1.13%. All this after hoping to stay under 0.96% heading into the week. MBS, for their part, didn't have a great week either. UMBS 1.5 coupons matched the same lows seen in early November. UMBS 2.0 coupons didn't quite get that low, but they moved from almost 104 to 103 in the space of just 4 days. To lose a point in 4 days is a pretty big deal in this market. It may not have been as big of a deal in March when things were super volatile or in years past, but in this market when things have been very, very calm and MBS have been outperforming so nicely, a 1 point drop is significant. It was definitely reflected on rate sheets. Everything's relative there, of course, because, you know, the average conventional 30-year fixed rate still under 3%, but we're definitely an eighth to a quarter of a percent higher over those few days, depending on the lender. In terms of economic data, the week's headliner was the jobs report on Friday, and that was a little bit of a deceptive report because it came out much weaker than expected at the headline level, but some of the internal components were a little bit friendlier. Specifically, the unemployment rate held steady at 6.7%, and the number of people who indicated they had permanently lost their job declined by 348,000 people. Number of people that have been jobless for 15 to 26 weeks declined by more than 300,000, and 4.6 million people said they didn't look for work due to the pandemic in this most recent survey versus 3.9 million last time. That would indicate that the increased COVID case counts and lockdowns are having an outsized impact on job counts. And the headline that was quite, you know, negative, maybe wasn't as negative as it initially seemed. One other really interesting piece there, good topic of conversation at your cocktail party when you're talking about the differences between payroll counts and unemployment rate, because everybody does that, right? Is the line item about multiple job holders. So if you have more than one job, the Bureau of Labor Statistics will count you twice as a quote unquote payroll. Your company will report that you're on payroll and your other company will report the same. So you will be adding two to the NFP number as opposed to most workers who are just adding one. But when you receive your phone call for the population survey, the one that determines unemployment rate and things like that, you are only counted as one person. So if you tell them you're employed, you count as one employed person. So in this instance of the jobs report, the multiple job holders dropped by 224,000. So that's 224,000 fewer payrolls. NFP would be lower by that much, with absolutely zero implication for the unemployment rate. In other words, they went from two jobs to one job. That took a bite out of payrolls, but unemployment rate stayed the same. In the week ahead, there is a fair amount of economic data. It doesn't really ramp up until Wednesday. Treasury auctions are happening early. That may have had a little bit of a negative impact on bonds last week. Sometimes we see treasuries get extra defensive heading into an auction week. Wednesday's economic data is when everything begins. Core CPI at 8:30 on Wednesday morning, expected to come in at 1.6 versus 1.6 last time. And that's a number that the Fed would like to see at 2.5 before they're thinking about hiking rates. So by their own admission, and according to the data, they're a long way off. Then on Thursday, we have jobless claims with us as always, and import-export prices, not a market mover. Finally, Friday, the week's headliner economic data, retail sales at 8:30 a.m., expected to come in totally flat versus a slight decline last time. That same morning, we'll get core producer prices. That's just wholesale level inflation, not the barn burner. Industrial production at 9:15, expected unchanged at 0.4, and consumer sentiment expected roughly unchanged at 80.0. All in all, I'll be looking for bonds to try to find a ceiling now, and we always have to wait for them to let us know where that's going to be. But the higher yields go, the closer and closer we're getting to a point where bond traders are going to say, hey, it looks like those yields are high enough. It looks like enough selling has been done that it is time to buy bonds again and try to capitalize on a little bit of a bounce in momentum heading back in a friendly direction. At that point, it could be just a token correction for technical reasons, or it could be redefinition of a new range ceiling that lasts for a while. That will depend on the economy, on COVID, on the vaccine rollout, on the legislation passed by the new administration, and a host of other things that are constantly playing into the day-to-day bond market volatility. Long story short, it was a bad week for rates. We had a technical breakout, and now we'll be looking very intently for our next support level. You are more than welcome and encouraged to join us in that process on MBS mbslive.net, where we follow markets and discuss market reactions and the mortgage industry in real time, all day, every day. And as always, Lickin' On Lending listeners get double the free time and no credit card requirement by using the code LOL when signing up for the free trial on mbslive.net.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it again. As Matt said, be sure to sign up for mbslive.net. Alice Alvey, good to have you with us. Alice is CMB Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage, and she's got this week's legislative update. Alice, what do you have for us?
Thanks, Dave. Hi, everyone. Well, you know, we've spent a lot of time over all of these years building automation to make our lives easier. And now, as we've watched the appraisal process in particular become really automated, right? Most of us are using Loan Collateral Advisor and Collateral Underwriter, and we see the dynamics and the depth of the information that Fannie and Freddie have to essentially just tell us what they think the appraised value will be. So the next step in their progression with their data has now come to light in a request for input. So this is an RFI issued by the Federal Housing Finance Agency, and we have until February 26th to comment. So the overall RFI is about modernizing the appraisal process and the fact that Fannie and Freddie's regulator, FIFA, wants to get comment about appraiser modernization, the uniform appraisal data set, AVMs, and valuation differences by borrower and neighborhood ethnic makeup. At the end of the day, it starts to look like this 22-page document is their request to say, we have data, we can help with providing like a hybrid appraisal with all the fluctuations in the appraisal market. So a lot of us, as we've had this big increase in volume, have struggled a lot with certain areas in particular with trying to get appraisals, if not even across the board, because the licensing of appraisers has stayed stagnant. So take a look at this RFI. Figure one is really telling, and it shows just the roller coaster of mortgage volume over the last 7 or so years, but the number of appraisers who are licensed stays the same. So if I'm an appraiser, I'm looking at this as a career map. I'm going, oh, I don't think I like all those drops where they hardly need me, but it sure looks good in those great high days. If I'm a lender, I'm looking at this going, this is crazy that I have to deal with it. I can't get enough appraisals. It's a big holdup in my loan process. We could be so much faster. So there's lots of different viewpoints and stakeholders who are going to be responding to this when you start to read between the lines and see that Fannie and Freddie have the data. So should we open up that a non-licensed person could go do an inspection, cover some basics, you know, eyes on the property, making sure the house isn't falling down and it looks like it does in the pictures that Fannie and Freddie have from their last data set, and with the data that the agencies have confidence in the appraised value. So when I look at this, that's the thing that jumps out at me in this proposal, which means as an industry, we have to respond. Lenders have to respond. We need the efficiency, but at the same time, we have to recognize the risks of who's going to be that person who goes out and does the inspection. And there's reference in here to it being a third-party inspection service. In my mind, I go, okay, great, another vendor service, right? I have to pay somebody else. Maybe it's a lower fee. Maybe they can get out there faster, but it sure doesn't look like they're going to let loan officers and people within my company go ahead and go out and do these inspections with the data. So there's a lot to digest here from many different angles. And you know that the appraisers are going to say, wait a minute, a licensed individual should go out there and know what they're looking at. At the same time, we've got to deal with, okay, what if we do come up with a hybrid appraisal? Are the states going to be okay with that? How do we get around all the regulation that governs appraisals if Fannie and Freddie are allowed to move forward with some kind of hybrid report? So there's a lot at stake here, a lot to comment on. I encourage everyone who's interested in this key component of our business process, right? The collateral is a huge part of what we do, making it easier, but keeping our risks under control is the balancing act that's going to be discussed through this RFI. So this is a very early stage. You don't have to worry about anything becoming law. It's super soon because an RFI has to then get researched, all the comments looked at, and then it becomes a request for proposal. And very often there can be years in between there. But this is step one. Like we said with the Truth in Lending Act, speak loud and speak early. Don't wait until things become an RFP before you try and get your voices heard. So please get out there, take a look at this. Actually, you can just Google FHFA RFI appraisal, and it should come up as your first hit, unless you're not in the mortgage business. So for me, all that mortgage stuff comes up first in my Google searches. Anyway, would love to make sure that the industry gets some great participation in this because there's going to be a lot of voices with so many stakeholders coming at it from a different angle. That's my report for today. Back to you.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate that report so much. Again, you want to get all of Alice's previous segments, go to our website, go to Alice's section, and you can listen to all of her reports. Be sure to check it out. Alan Pollock is here with this week's tech update. Alan, what you got for us?
Hey, David. Happy Monday, as you always say, TGIM. Thank God it's Monday. Excited to be here. Thank you, everyone, for listening to us, especially this technology segment each week. What a week ahead. In the non-mortgage news, I've got two great things to talk about. The first one is, we all know the social media platform Parler. Well, they've been booted from Google Play, the App Store, and now even lost AWS hosting. Many argue that the freedom of speech is under attack, and others wonder if there's too many deep pockets and leverage from political giants. We'll see it all unfold this week, at least start to. It's not going to be over that fast. It's definitely not affecting mortgage tech. But the second non-mortgage story I want to talk about, David, is there's a union being started at Google. And what's kind of interesting is they don't yet have a majority, but there's a technology programmer that has started this union with others. And their hope is to have one word. They want to have a voice. They want to help people become part of a democratic process, pay dues, look at change, invoke change. They want the freedom to decline work that doesn't align with their values. And they want all their employees to have the same benefits. So very interesting to see how this continues to unfold. It was a big story last week. It will continue to be a big story. Now let's get into the mortgage side of the news. As a reminder, again, don't forget the new IRLA is very important, should be on everyone's top radar. MSMO version 3.4 submission to the GSEs. It did start on January 1st and it will be mandatory March 1st. We're 2 weeks into the month of January. That leaves not too much more time. Make sure that your vendors are testing. Make sure if you have your own code and you've been doing the IRLA that you've done so. And like I mentioned last week, make sure that if you're reporting on data, you don't retire old data fields because that includes old applications, but you actually also start reporting on new data fields. A couple cool things going on in the news. This one's kind of interesting. We haven't really heard much from Questsoft lately. We know that they are a provider of compliance software. They've got a lot of great tools that they provide. A lot of banks, credit unions, and lenders use them. Well, a company called NContracts, they're also a provider of, they call it integrated risk management solutions. On the financial services side of the world, a lot less on the mortgage side, they've just acquired them. And this acquisition will now give them that bridge from lending into mortgage. And we know how complex mortgage is. There's a lot of fintech companies that don't do the mortgage side of the transaction. This now helps them acquire more business and provide more value to all 1,500 of their clients. So if you're a mortgage tech company and you're trying to bridge into that side of the world, the fintech side, definitely want to take a look at NContracts. But if you're a financial services company or if you're a lender, take a look at NContracts. They may be able to solve everything for you. We all know Arrive, the Arrive platform. Well, LendWise has officially acquired the Arrive platform. It's been many months after they've taken over management of the platform and they just finalized a deal to take over complete ownership. If you remember in early 2020, they integrated Arrive's platform into their own tech stack, bringing different integrations and different tools. And now they've fully taken over. And LendWise, for those of you that don't know, they're mostly funded by wholesale lenders themselves, included UWM, HomePoint, PRMG, Flagstar, Caliber, and some others. Moving on into the news, David, a couple more interesting points. Blend now has LPA from Freddie integrated into their system. Simple Nexus just got their Series B, $108 million. That's a total of $128 million that they've raised. They're going to be focusing on e-closing, which is obviously one of the big areas for consumers. And really for loan officers, their mobile mortgage market segments is really, really important. They're continuing to enable loan officers to have that mobile experience. Borrowers as well. We all know Total Expert. But for those of you that don't frequently listen to our podcast, now you know. Well, they've just announced the launch of Total Expert for wholesale. And this platform will empower everybody to have more market share in that different channel. One quick reminder I really wanted to bring up is vendor due diligence. You know, it's the beginning of the year. It's time to make sure that we are verifying that we're following up with our vendors. We're performing those due diligence activities. If you have any questions on what that means, there's lots of resources online. Fannie Mae even has resources, but you also can reach out to David Licken or myself. You know how to get a hold of us and we can help you along. And then in addition, I really wanted to bring up today, you know, team structure. We talked about this a little bit at the end of 2020. It's so important that if you're developing your own software, you need to look at how do you break your teams up? How do you efficiently build code and deploy code? And there's different types of setups. I build what's called a triad, and you should try it. It's a software developer, a QA engineer, and a technology manager. That technology manager, their job is to make sure that that software developer and that QA engineer have everything they need to understand the requirements, to execute, build what they need to do, test it, and deliver it. Now, of course, you have business analysis people, you have QA, I'd rather BA people, you have other folks part of the process. But this triad is how the code gets developed and gets delivered. And then for next week, what we're going to talk about is a word that not everybody totally understands. It's called DevOps. And how does DevOps play a role with the different technology, one that our vendors are offering us? It's very important because we need to make sure that their DevOps is intact and we've done the due diligence to make sure systems won't go down. And if you're building your own code, you're going to need your own DevOps team and the different ways to manage, report, and support DevOps. Thanks everyone for listening. Can't wait to hear today's hot topic and we'll talk to you next week. Don't forget, if you have hot news and you want to share that with us, you can reach me, Allen, A-L-L-E-N, at tms-advisors.com. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Allen. Really appreciate this week's tech update. Always interesting. Well, folks, that ends this week's weekly mortgage update. If you're listening live, just stay right here because we're going to get right into the hot topic. If you're listening on a downloaded basis, just click on to the next episode and you're going to hear what those of us that are here live heard in just a few moments. Welcome to today's hot topic segment of the Licken on Lending podcast. Very excited about our guest today. We pre-recorded this last week, so let's get right into it. Folks, I am so excited to have Dan Putney here with me. Dan is Vice President of Sales. He's also a managing director with the third largest fintech company in the world, Finastra. And we're so honored to have Finastra as a sponsor. I'm honored to have Dan joining us today. And not only is he a client, a friend, but he has really become someone special to me. But we're here to talk a lot about a recent survey Finastra did. And I think there's some really interesting insights that are going to be great for our listeners as they plan for this new year. We just had on last week, we had Dr. Fratton Tony, who is the chief economist for the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, and he talked about how purchases are going up, and a good chunk of those new purchases are going to be millennials. So the information we're going to be talking with Dan about today, listeners, is really timely. It's fresh off the press, and we want you to plug this into your planning. And then also, as you look at technology, it's one of the biggest components of the success moving forward in the new year and into affinity here in the mortgage world is having the right technology partners in the process. So we're going to mix some of that in here as well. So Dan, again, let's get started. Good to have you here. Let's talk a little bit about the survey. What was the catalyst for the survey? Will you guys provide information for clients? Is this a service for your originators, the companies that use your technology? What was the purpose of this survey?
Yeah, great question. So Finastra has always been the leader in providing that end-to-end mortgage technology, everything from that digital point of sale through the loan origination system and even into servicing. We've been around for 20 years. I mean, we started this in 1997, I believe it was, as MortgageBot. And in order for us to continually enhance our system, see what the trends are doing, see what our customers and their customers are looking to do, we do surveys similar to what we're going to talk about today. And this was one that we did over the past 6 months amid the COVID pandemic. And we reached out to our financial institution clients and also their customers. In fact, we did a survey with about 301 customers of banks, as well as 34 of our clients, to really get a good idea of not only what our banks are thinking the trends are, but what are their customers saying? And do the two line up? So we put together a white paper. And David, I'll thank you right here and now for joining us in that and giving some of your feedback as we were putting together a white paper. And I think we've even got a couple of quotes of yours built into this.
We can make this survey available to our listeners via link, if I am correct on that. Is that correct? We can make this available?
Absolutely.
So listeners, go back to our show page for this podcast for this particular interview, and you can download the link. So I start off by talking about referencing the interview we did with Dr. Michael Frattantoni last week about the purchase volume and the growth, and what's within the millennials and within the ranks of the newest entrants into the mortgage, and that's the Gen Zers. My daughter's in that group. She just got married. They're getting ready to buy their first home. They want to start preparing for it. It's interesting. They do not really want to talk to anybody yet. In other words, they don't want to engage anybody. They want information. And one of the first questions you put out there, buyers seeking guidance from lenders. It's interesting that this survey turned out the response that it did. I want to talk about this briefly because it came in, I feel I know enough to buy a home. 58% of people responded. I'm wondering if that's more of a older demographic, because certainly the newer demographic, they've never bought a home before. Talk to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you look over the past 6 months and where rates have been, I think there's been a lot of refinances and people who have bought more than one homes in older generations. So yeah, I do think there's always going to have that group of people that have bought a home before. But what's interesting is whether they feel they know enough to buy a home today or they want to learn more. Only 11% of the people said, I know everything I need to know. So there's definitely that need for education throughout this process. I go back and I look at the number one Google search regarding mortgages is how much home can I afford, right? Mm-hmm. So we start looking at how do we build our website as a bank to put the content, the order, how it's organized on the site to be able to educate our borrowers, not only in what the rate is for today or what the interest rates are for particular 30-year fixed or whatever, but it's how do I educate them on the entire process? What we find, and we'll see even later in the study, is a lot of the stress comes by just not feeling educated. So we know within MortgageBot, we provide a lot of digital solutions, right? But we also yep. know that if we can provide that rate, fee, payment information up front, that 72% of the time, they're going to go through and apply for that loan. And they're going to look for loan status, and they're going to look for educational tools along that process. And you brought up your daughter, David, and newly married and buying a house. I look at my kids who are first year in college and going through COVID of their senior year. So that idea of learning through the internet and digital is stronger than it's ever been through this COVID environment. If they expected me to help my kids get through calculus, they got another thing coming, right? They have to provide those tools. So we've learned not only through our kids doing that, but also how important that education is as we're building this out. And we'll see it even more in the process as we go a little bit further into the survey.
Well, I think it's really important to point out that the younger generation needs information. And while they may know enough to buy a home, it's the financing of the home that really gets where the complexity is. And I did not realize that was the number one search in Google. That's an interesting data point. I'm glad you brought that out.
Yeah, under mortgages. Yep, absolutely.
So Dan, one of the things you point out in this survey is that borrowers seem to be wanting to be educated on the process. 72% said that. Talk about this question and what you've learned out of this.
A lot of that process is timing. We automatically assume somebody is going to buy the house or they've got the closing costs, but there's so much stress built around the process, right? We know when we lock a loan, there's a certain period of time that that lock is good for. And if I'm looking to purchase this home on a lower interest rate where rates right now are ultra low, then I know I've got a short window in order to lock that and get through the process. Or right now with the inventory so low in the real estate market, I could lose a loan if I can't close by a certain date. So the stresses that are built into this are extremely high. And I think no matter what we do in life, the more educated we are, the less stress we have about that situation. Same goes into purchasing a house. If I know, hey, these are the documents I'm going to need, this is the process that we take, and this is how long typically you should be able to expect, right? You should get an approval almost immediately through the website, but then the underwriter is going to call you or the processor is going to call you or ask for information, or it's going to be provided right away through a digital experience. So if that education is up front and I know the time frame, well, that just takes some stress away from me. If I know the rates and how to lock loans in those pieces, again, it's less stress and it's going to allow us to get through this process as well.
It's really interesting that 72% of the respondents said, I know some, but I would like my lender to educate me on the process. So educating through the entire process is so important. How do you do that through your MortgageBot solution?
I think it starts out by going back to that first customer question of rates and fees and being able to provide real-time rates in the system right at the beginning. Not only know what the rates are, but also know what the fees are, what the city, county, state taxes are going to be on the property and how that's going to affect my payment on a regular basis. What exactly will that payment be? I think that's probably the number one thing that they want to get their arms around. Also, within the system, we can build this website out to however you want it to look and feel for your branding and for questions and FAQs and being able to provide that education up front. We're also seeing people who are providing videos on their website of giving some tutorials on what to expect throughout that process. So there's tons of tools today that you can build in. You can build in a chat feature into MortgageBot. But the beauty is being able to have that real-time rate, fee, payment, and being able to walk through in a very easy-to-use system, right? Even through the application process, having a very easy-to-use where we're only asking questions that pertain to that borrower, almost like a TurboTax type question as well.
Yeah. That's really good. A number of us referenced TurboTax as kind of this gold standard on how to walk through a complicated process. Nothing more complicated than taxes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Mike Frantoni last week talked about how interest rates might be going up slowly, but they're still at the lowest levels they've been at in decades and decades. So that really brought about an interesting and probably a predictable response. So the question is, when do you expect to purchase your next property? Talk about the responses you got from this survey.
It's funny, the consumers were saying, I think there was 12% or 13% said between 0 and 12 months, where the majority of them were looking 24 months or greater. But when we looked at the financial institutions, 57% of them said in the next 0 to 12 months.
No, I think your quote here about COVID has really changed things. I think people, what they want to buy as a home is changed. They might have thought they wanted to live in the city in New York and get a flat there. Now they're going, what? I'm not so sure I live in the city. I want to get outside. You look at new listings. There's a whole shift in what people are looking at. I think it may be driving the timeframes as well.
Absolutely. I don't know about you, but I've been spending a lot of time with my family in the house, and I'm so happy. I have a backyard and I have a place to get out and walk if needed. And so I think that transition from urban to rural has been very strong. I think many people on this call have probably seen that in where their borrowers are moving to buy houses. I think the other thing in this dynamic is the ultra low interest rates. So again, it comes back to that affordability question of, can I afford it today at these low interest rates, and how long are they going to stay that way? So as you said, somebody on a previous show had said, it looks like the purchase markets continue. I could see that if we can keep these low interest rates and COVID acting the way it does, I think there's a lot of people that had learned some lessons through that and have moved out to the rural areas.
Yeah, I think that's going to impact the timeframes. It's interesting that 57% of the banks say 0 to 12 months is what they anticipate, and yet consumers are saying 24 months or more. I think the demand seems to be shifting to the shorter timeframes as we get the vaccine out and people want to get moving.
David, that comes back to a little bit of education. Banks are a little better informed on what the rate market is doing and how it affects a payment, where I think the consumer's catching up. And I think there's probably a little bit of an unfair advantage for banks in that question.
Yeah. The next survey, which you asked about how consumers select a mortgage lender, very predictable here. 42% say rates. Talk about your survey here and the difference between the bank's results and the consumers.
I think they're both right on track. I don't think it's any surprise that the number one thing that somebody looks at is rate. Again, going back to affordability. And we look at MortgageBot as a tool that provides that ability to do that research. So banks can be more competitive. They can put that information right up front to allow them to compete on the rate side of it. I think the other piece to it was when you ask the borrowers, the number two thing for a consumer was loyalty. You look at loyalty and you immediately tie that to a trusted advisor, right? Somebody I can trust is who I'm going to be loyal to. So you tend to see that now move a little bit more to that relationship, right? Whether it's a relationship with a community bank or credit union or a loan officer they have worked with for many, many years, that's going to come into play. It's not going to be the first thing by any means, but it will be number two on their list. Again, tying you back to education. The better you can educate them, the better relationship, better loyalty, trust, all of those pieces.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting when you compare the results of the survey. Consumers are about the relationship, and we've always said it's a relationship business. That's the number one thing on here. That should be driving some of your strategy. Another contrast between banks and what consumers are saying, what is your preferred way to apply for a mortgage loan. Talk about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think the number one way as we look at this is really that digital online. And that's no surprise, especially in this COVID environment, right? We're now ordering all of our food. We're living on Amazon. We're doing our takeout orders from restaurants. But being in New York, David, we're pretty locked down here. So everything is done online. So it's no surprise that if you're comfortable putting in your credit card and putting in your information to Amazon or multiple other online vendors, that it's only natural that as you start moving into larger purchases, that you're comfortable with that way of doing business. I think the key piece, though, is as you start to look, whether it's desktop or mobile or through the phone call, those types of pieces, it comes down to having multiple channels that allow somebody to get a consistent experience. We realized that many years ago with MortgageBot, as we were building it out, allowing the ability for somebody to start an application, whether it's on a mobile device or a desktop, doesn't matter. They can go back and forth. Or maybe they start there and they realize, wow, this is a little bit more complicated than I initially thought. Let me call up that loan officer and see if I can finish this over the phone or in the office or at Starbucks or maybe in my living room with them. But the key is having that consistent experience. The last thing you want is to go online and get one rate and fee, and then you meet up with a loan officer and they go, oh, wait a minute. Well, it's now going to be this rate and fee. So it's that consistency across all channels, not only with the rates, but also when you start looking at the process, right? Starting here and then moving through the process. So we've always allowed that. We've always figured that is the most important thing if you're going to move to a digital channel is to allow multiple ways to do business with that customer so you don't lose them.
Mobile is important, but it's interesting in the consumer analysis on this that 34% still feel they want to go face-to-face, but everyone seems to want to start the process. 52 to 57%, very good alignment there on how they start the process. Then at some point in time, that relationship part of the component, which brings you to the face-to-face, which may be face-to-face Zoom or some type of screen sharing technology, but it has more of that relationship. There is great information as you plan your future and what you're doing, and that's the purpose of what we're trying to offer here. So let's talk about what consumers say is the time frames. There has been, again, some decent alignment between what a consumer's perception of the time frames are and a bank's perception. Let's talk a little bit about time frames.
Yeah, so when you look at borrowers and consumers in this survey, 37% think it should be closed within 3 to 15 days, right? So that comes down to how well educated they were in the process. I think where we begin to get in alignment is really that 15 to 30 days. I think this is where banks and consumers start coming together and go, okay, I think this is more realistic. It might get a little bit longer in some cases, but we look at this throughout our MortgageBot solution is data, right? How can a bank use data to know their process and the length of time it takes from application to closing? And what are the bottlenecks within that process in the operations that can slow me down? I think so often we look at data as being reactive, right? In most cases it is, right? This is the time it took, where I think we need to start looking at data as more in a prescriptive and predictive way to now, how do we build this out and look for borrowers that we can meet expectations with and look for moving our processes to do that? And I say it because it's not only looking at the underwriting process or particular underwriters who may take longer than others. We also have to start looking at investors, and maybe one investor takes twice as long as another to be able to do that. So it comes down to those pieces as well as integrations, right? And how do vendors now start to come in? If I can now pull income and assets through FormFree or Docs through DocMagic or whoever up front, that's going to allow my process to move much quicker. Again, it comes down to speed, because we know speed is what drives loan lock rates. It's what drives closing dates and all of those pieces. So we've created within MortgageBot a dashboard around data, right? So you can see right from a dashboard, not only what are the demographics of my borrowers, and maybe we can come up with more of a product because we understand that looking at the peers, MortgageBot has over 1,500 banks and credit unions that use us. We can see not only what you're doing, but let's compare to all the peers in the marketplace. Maybe only the 10 that really are closest to me. So we can now start saying, how do I compete with others? How do I decrease my turn times and get better speed within the market? How do I use data to do that? And I can get real-time information through Microsoft and Power BI relationship that we have to be able to have these dashboards.
That is really interesting. What do you view as stressful in getting a mortgage? Talk about the results.
Yeah, so there's multiple pieces in here. I think the number one comes down to stress, right? We already spoke to stress. I'm not going to build off of that and speed and all of those things. But what it comes down to is, what is the comfort level of a consumer to do business through a digital channel? And as we look at where are they most comfortable, what surprised me a little bit, and I think it's because the consumers are more comfortable than even the financial institutions, is the e-closing side of it, right? And how they have no problem doing it. However, on the financial institution side, maybe 81% for consumer, but only 72% of the financial institutions being comfortable with it. Well, as we all know, there's multiple reasons for that, right? It's not just what the institution feels. It's who are we selling it to? What is the state we live in? All the multiple factors that go into the regulatory and compliance piece, which, as we know, is loosening up. The second thing that they're most comfortable with is sharing documents. 71% have no problems uploading documents. We're proud of MortgageBot because we were able to build that portal to allow documents to come in. And we've had this for many years now, to be able to not only upload docs, but also check the status of your documents, your loans, your appraisal, all of those pieces right up front. So comfort level comes with ease of use. We've got 63% who are very comfortable applying through a digital channel. When we look at the financial institutions, we've all caught on at this point, right? In fact, David, even in the MortgageBot solutions, we're constantly enhancing that as well. In fact, we now, through all the early changes, have gone through all of our LOS screens and updated them into a very easy to use, refreshed look and feel for that user experience, not only for the borrower, the consumer, but also for the bank who is our user.
Dan, you have a conclusion slide here. It's one that I encourage everyone to take a look at. Interesting information. Cover the data here.
Yeah, so we put the survey out to 301 paid consumers, right? We paid them to do the survey so we could get some accurate information. And we found that the majority of them were between the ages of 25 and 64, but the largest group was really that 35 to 40 four-year-olds. Again, I think this group is very comfortable with that digital experience, but this was throughout the U.S. We had a very wide range of both consumers and 34 different bank clients that we used throughout the U.S. to do the survey.
It's really interesting. And you also get into the future of finance. The future of finance is open. Talk about this survey and the demographics behind it.
I think as we wrap up the survey and we look at Finastra as a whole, we're committed to an open ecosystem. We have a platform called FusionFabric.cloud, which is working directly with Microsoft to build this out, which allows integrations with vendors, with third parties, to provide that cutting edge experience. We always want to be the smartest and most innovative company out there, but we've realized that there's some really cool technologies that are hitting the market, and we want to be able to allow our customers to use that. So by providing this FusionFabric.cloud, that allows them to do it. So I say that because that is one part of Finastra. That's how MortgageBot works with Finastra. So I know we're talking about mortgage today, but as we start to expand even the mortgage solutions, we're pulling into our new Originate platform that we're going to be having here in the next couple of months, account opening and consumer lending and business and commercial lending. So if you're looking at expanding your product lines to even past mortgage, this is a great place to start.
There's a lot of great information in this survey, folks. I can't wait for you to avail yourself of it. So go to the Lincoln on Lending website, and specifically to this interview, there's a link in here which allows you to download this. Great information as you're planning 2021 and beyond. We're trying to help you plan for the future. Dan, I want to say thank you so much for taking time.
Great. Thanks for having me, David.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Dan Putney. Again, all of us programs for the month of January is designed to help you as you get ready for the new year 2021. As we wrap up today's podcast, again, I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, the Community Mortgage Lenders of America, also Indicom, as well as Incelerate, Mobility RE, and Modex. We're also grateful for all our regulars who are joining us each and every week on the podcast. And most of all, we're grateful for you, our listeners. Thanks for being with us this week. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.